This show is sponsored by Narconon UK.
Call Narconon today at 01435 512 460. 01435 512 460.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my very special guest, former CEO of Isle of Wight Zoo and founder of the Wild Heart Trust, Charlotte Corney. Welcome, Charlotte.
Hello, thank you for talking to me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So, former CEO of the Isle of Wight Zoo, tell us about that exciting new time.
It is really exciting. Basically, as listeners may or may not know, we became a charity last April. We formed the Wild Heart Trust, and the zoo is now operated by the trust. And we are now going through another change, whereby I'm stepping aside in my role as CEO, so that a new CEO can come in and take the reins from here on. We've got an awful lot of ambition, a lot of dreams to be realised, a lot of work to be done. So my role is going to be shifting and changing, still supporting the charity in any which way that I can. But on a day-to-day basis, I'm no longer going to be the CEO.
How do you feel about that?
Yes, very mixed, I suppose. Mixed emotions, mixed thoughts, but ultimately I know that it's the right thing to do. People have said to me, you know, do you feel like you're going to be losing control, or how's it going to be, it's your baby and all of these things. But you know, to a degree, but you know, we have now wider sort of objectives, and those are not all just personal to me, although this has been my family, you know, sort of home and my place of living since I was 3 months old. But I've taken quite a long time to come to the decision, and therefore I feel very secure in the knowledge that it's the right one. And I'm just really, really curious and excited to see how everything's going to unfold and all the good that's going to come of that, really. So, yeah, it's very, very positive.
And how do you feel about the animals? Because obviously there'll be some stepping back from them and letting go of them. Mm. And I know how close you are to them. Mm-hmm. It must feel a bit like a mum leaving their babies at the nursery gate for the first time.
Well, I suppose that's where things are different, because I can't do that. You know, I can't do that. They are, well, some of the ones that I've had since they were tiny and hand-reared, some of the big cats, for example, it's outside of my capacity as a human being to you know, in any way move away from them. And everybody understands that, as does the lady who's coming in to take over my role. So there's no expectation that I'm going to in any way dilute my involvement with those animals. Those particular animals are now reaching the sort of upper part of their lifespan. So obviously that's an era that will be coming to a close, but I'm absolutely dedicated to going through that process with them. So yes, I won't be moving away from them at all.
That's good to know. And you've got you're looking forward to some new animals coming, aren't you?
That's right, we are. And with obviously a succession of loss over the years, because we had 28 big cats here once, which was way too many, to be fair, and we've just gradually been losing them because they've been getting older. That's brought a lot of tears and a lot of upset, of course. The team get very, very close to the animals, as does the community as well. So we've really felt that intensity of loss. It's bittersweet always, because the loss means that we have suddenly a new and opened up capacity for bringing in new rescued animals that are in need of a forever long-term home with us. And at the end of June, we expect now to bring in a new part of the Wild Heart family, which will be 5 tigers coming from an outplacement centre in Spain, and that's a centre that basically accommodates animals that have been rescued until they can find a permanent home. So we're really, really happy, because obviously if we move those animals here, then the outplacement centre can bring in animals that are waiting in the wings. So it's sort of a win-win.
Fantastic. And when you introduce the new animals, how do the older residents take to them?
It's a really good question. Yeah, it's really funny, because, I mean, obviously this is, you know, yeah, we're a zoo, we're an attraction, whatever you want to say, but at the end of the day, we're a home to lots of different animals that all come together to live in this place. And sometimes it's like something out of EastEnders here, you know, the lemurs all falling out with each other and this and that's going on. And it's a very dynamic environment. So I think bringing the new cats in, they will be much younger, they'll be more active. Obviously, in the wild, tigers and other big cats, as you'll know, are very, very territorial and would always keep quite a wide berth from each other. But here, they do know that they're sort of safe from each other, so they don't generally feel threatened. They tend to be more curious than anything else. It tends to be more stimulating for them and enriching rather than anything else. And they won't be living, the new cats that are coming in, we've got to be a little bit careful because of a disease risk. We know that they have a disease that can be contagious to other cats, and so we have to manage them carefully. So they won't be living right next door to our other cats, but I imagine there's going to be lots of peering over the garden fence and, you know, sussing them out, and there will be a lot of excitement, I think, from even from the geriatrics. I think it will get them excited.
And there are a lot of sort of wet noses put out of joints.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the thing is, you know, the long-term residents, they will continue to get the same intensity of care from us and everything else, even though obviously all the, you know, the team is going to be excited to have new animals to care for. I'm sure those original residents will make sure that they, you know, that they still get the look-in that they deserve. So I think more than anything, it will kind of revive some of them a bit. It will get them interested and more motivated to be up and about.
Yes, there was something going on today. I had a look round before we spoke, and one was so interested in what was going on in another one's enclosure.
Yeah.
And looking, she didn't care that I was standing there. She was just looking to get a glimpse.
Yeah.
Because there was one of the keepers was with the other tiger, and just sussing it all out, like you say, and all her instincts were on, you know, red alert.
Yeah. I mean, they are really observant animals. Obviously, cats just generally are, and their eyesight is brilliant, so they can see much better than we can long distance. So, I mean, obviously, there'll be different smells and things going on, and so it will be really interesting to see what happens. We're shuffling everybody around. So the older residents, actually three tigers, Zia and Aisha, who live together, and Simi. They're going to be moving into the new complex that we're building, and then the new cats will be moving into the two areas that they've been occupying, so in the middle section of the zoo. So everyone's going to be having a new home, effectively. And again, we think that this will probably be positive for the geriatrics, that they're going to go to a new place. And that's also a bit of future planning, because Aisha and Zia, who recently, fairly recently, both been gone through the loss of their siblings, we know that one of those two girls is going to go before the other one, and moving them around as we're doing means that the one that's left behind will still be living next to Simi. If we leave them where they are, one's going to be marooned, and, you know,
right.
So it was all kind of a strategy to make sure that A, we can keep the biosecurity side of things good because of the incoming infectious disease risk with the new cats, and also because we know we're going to lose Zia or Aisha, and we don't want the left one to be, you know, isolated. So
you do talk about them as if they are members of your family, which of course they
totally
are.
Totally, they are. They absolutely are. There's no, for me, there's absolutely no separation at all, and I'm really lucky because my partner also thinks this way, and so, you know, it's not peculiar to us at all that we put them on that level, and they are as important to me as my closest friends and family, partner, you know.
Yes.
And that's how I think it should be, you know. Why not? Just because we don't look the same and we're not the same species, you know, we have a depth of love which is obviously different on either side. I don't expect that Zia loves me in the way that I love her.
Is she the one you hand-reared?
She's the one I hand-reared from a day old, yeah, and she's now 22 years old. So she's the oldest tiger in the UK, and probably much further afield, in fact. She's,
yeah. And you do, you have to sort of do not rub her nose through the...
Yes, she had a cuddle yesterday, and she came over to the fence and had a real cuddle.
So she's through the fence,
yes,
always through the
always
fence
through
now.
Always through the fence, not inside.
And how old was she when you stopped having close physical contact?
She was about 2 years when I stopped going in with her.
So in sort of human terms, how old would that be?
Oh, that's a question. I guess maybe, you know, sort of, she would be maybe 12 or something.
Yeah,
you know.
So you almost saw her through her childhood in a way.
Exactly that. And then, of course, by that age, she was in living with Sina, the white tiger who we lost in November, who was her younger sister, by 6 months. So Sina was by then 18 months, Zia was 2 years, and they were completely bonded. So they didn't have, and they were very playful, and they would beat each other up and sort of play with each other, and they didn't need me for that, you know, socialisation. They just continued to need me to be mum to them, basically, you know.
So did they, show you some sort of respect as their mum?
Sometimes. They did, actually. I mean, they were very funny, and thinking back on the memories of being in with them, because, you know, Zia had this thing, and she used to sort of get hold of my arm or something, and she would be on her back, and you know how they sort of would go at you with their back
feet. Like cats do,
yeah, and she would do that, and her ears would be back, and she'd be looking at me, and she would gradually get sort of more and more pressure on my arm or my leg, whatever that she'd got onto, and then she'd just look at me, and then she'd do more and look at me, and then when she knew that I was really, you know, in starting to feel it, and I would sort of be pretty cross with her, and then she would let go. So they're just testing all the time.
So what were your safety mechanisms within that? Did you ever feel really threatened?
No, I didn't. Safety mechanisms, I as they got older, I wore chainsaw proof trousers, which my dad bought me, made me wear sort of dungarees.
Did he make them? Because he was an engineer, your father.
He was, yeah. No, I don't know where he got them from, but he just presented them one day and said, oh, you need to wear these. And I always wore a scarf around my neck, because obviously if they did, quite often they'd go from behind and they would jump on you and they'd go to the back of your neck, because that's naturally what they would do. They would naturally kill their prey by you know, sinking one of their canines through the vertebrae in the back of the neck. So that was their instinct always, to trip. So first of all, they would trip you up, which is great fun for them, you know, trip you up. And then as you fall, they get on your back and go to the back of the neck. All the time chuffing in your ear. So they're sort of saying, I'm only playing, you know. And apart from that, no, that was it really. And the only time that I ever had a feeling that I was about to be attacked was with Zina, and I had come up with a really stupid sort of experiment that I wanted to do to see if she would recognise me while she was asleep by my scent. So I crept up on her while she was sleeping, and when she woke up, she was clearly very confused and on high alert, you know, and she went to attack me. And the minute that I spoke, she stopped almost mid-flight and started chuffing, and then came to me and nuzzled me. So that sort of taught me a good lesson. Never creep up on a sleeping tiger.
No, let sleeping tigers lie.
Yeah.
They were both, the lion was asleep this morning. It was just incredible to see.
Big Casper.
Yes.
Oh, he's just wonderful, isn't he? He really is. And we always say every morning, he looks like he's just been to the salon, doesn't he, for a couple of blow dries.
Oh, and he knows it.
I know. He's excessively handsome. He really is like something out of, we always say, it's like something out of Disney.
Yes.
He's just impossibly good looking. And he lives in with his younger half-sister, Frosty. Obviously, she's been spayed, so there's no chance they can breed together. They're just companions. So sweet together. But she wears the trousers, though. She wears the trousers.
As he was lying there, you got that, you know, you thought you could go and lie with him and cuddle him, but clearly not. We're talking about you hand-rearing these animals, these predatory animals, and very casually, what did your mother, now obviously your father was kind of okay with it, how was your mum with you doing it?
Never asked,
and she never
said. My mum was really tolerant, you know. She was a really tolerant lady, and when I think back to the fact that, you know, she was only in her late 20s when my dad was quite a lot older than my mum, when she, you know, sort of succumbed to moving from her comfortable lifestyle, and they were living sort of Manchester way, to live on the Isle of Wight, to take up the operation of a derelict zoo, you know. So she did. She just took everything in her stride. I don't remember her ever saying that she was concerned about anything. My dad, of course, was very maverick in his antics and had no care or concern for health and safety whatsoever, because he used to get bitten by venomous snakes left, right and centre. And we had a leopard in the house for quite a long time, and her name was Flossie, and my mum hand-reared her. My mum also had some bits and pieces.
Yes, because she used to turn up at your school to pick you up with Flossie on the passenger seat.
Yeah, Flossie in our Section 2CV, yeah.
That must have been quite a sight.
Yeah, she was a great animal. I absolutely loved her. And I was at school, I went to a convent actually in Ryde, and then I was there till I was 12. So for all my friends, it was completely normal. They'd grown up with coming to my house and having, you know, pillow fights with bears, and it was just completely normal. And then when I moved and went to a new school, age 12, I suddenly became really conscious and aware that this was really freaky and different and weird, and people were a little bit sort of unsure what to make of it. So that was when there was a real kind of realization that it wasn't normal. We always had animals sort of that came out and about because it was a different era, and my dad would take Tammy the tiger to pub, and she'd sit on the bar stool down in Brading. Get the name of the pub now.
Oh, how wonderful.
And so Yarbridge.
Yes, and for walks on the beach as
walks on the beach, yeah, that was normal as well. Take them on the beach.
So when did that all have to stop?
I guess that would have been in the 90s, in the sort of late 90s. Yeah, late 90s. Mm. Which, now it's quite a long time ago, isn't it?
It is a long time ago, but that must have been a wonderful thing for people to just do that. Early morning, I guess.
But normally, yeah.
And how do it? So when that was happening, how did the dogs react?
It was when I used to take Zia out. Zia remains, she's a very sensitive cat, very sensitive girl. And whereas Zina, her younger white sister, was always very, she was a real tomboy. She was just really bold and tough and happy-go-lucky and deep thinker. And she's, very sensitive. And we used to meet Jack Russell. If we walked down, not towards Culver Way, but if we walked down into Sandown Way, we'd meet this guy with Jack Russell. And Zia was terrified of it. She used to hide behind my legs and wait until the Jack Russell had gone by. And then she'd come out, and we always used to laugh. Myself and Leonie would just like greet each other, say hi, and then we'd just laugh because Zia would be like hiding behind me.
Oh, that's a lovely
story. They're just not people. And this is one of the things we try and really utilised our animal residents for here, is to shift people's perceptions and preconceptions about what animals are and are not. And people tend, quite often, not just children but adults, when they come in, they see a big cat and they roar at it. That's their first instinct, is to communicate by kind of roaring at it. And we always encourage people to chuff to them, because that's their way of saying hi and I'm not a threat.
Right.
And
when you say chuff, that's that.
Yeah, it's that, like blowing a row of F's, which is their kind of their equivalent to a domestic cat's purr.
Okay, because I've heard one of them do that with you.
Yeah,
I was lucky enough to be here where you were kind of talking to her, and she came over to you, and you were petting her,
You can see they're so gentle, and they're so not, obviously when in the wild, if they need to be tough and aggressive and the predator that they are, they can be, and that can change very quickly. And we see it even here when they've got food.
Mm.
They can become extraordinarily aggressive very quickly, because that instinct is always there, as it is with a domestic cat or any other animal.
Yes.
But most of the time, if you're kind to them and they don't feel threatened, then they are not, big sort of angry monsters. And they're not templates, they're not all the same. You get some tigers in the wild where they're studied that are just far more aggressive than others. There was one that was studied in Bandhagarh National Park in India that was named Charger, because he would constantly charge everything. He would charge jeeps, elephants, whatever. He was just obviously had a lot of testosterone. He was a very dominant animal. And so they're all different. They all have different characters.
Yeah, and they've all had different pasts, haven't
exactly.
they, that made them the animals
exactly.
they are, I suppose, different
exactly.
experiences.
Just like us.
Yeah, exactly. When you talk about the chuffing sound, when I bring my sort of 2-year-old grandson, Archie, here, there's one that takes a real shine to him and comes up and does this chuffing. And I thought it was a sign that she'd taken a bit of a shine to him and was looking at him as a bit of a mid-morning snack. But clearly, I think she wants to be friends, which
definitely.
Is lovely. Because he's got the same colour sort of hair.
Oh, maybe
and
that's
he's small.
Then.
He's got quite a furry little coat that he used to wear in winter. So I think
there's nothing sinister about that. Friendship.
Which is really lovely. Yeah.
I mean, they don't, we say to people, it's not like they see us as walking kind of human hamburgers. We're not on their menu.
No.
They're not used to eating human, and therefore they don't see us as food at all. In the wild, of course, if they get desperate, and only if they get desperate, will they start turning to eating humans. But that's really the last resort for them. Apparently, we don't taste too good. But also, they're just naturally, quite afraid of humans generally in the wild.
Okay.
And they're well fed here.
Yes, of course.
They get anything that they want, and they're never hungry. So, yeah, I mean, if they were to kill someone, they wouldn't then, you know, can never say 100% for sure, but it'd be unlikely they would then gobble them up.
Right, okay. And on that note, I think we're going to go for a quick break. Thank you very much, Charlotte Courtney.
Your community, your local station. We are your Vectis Radio. FM 104.6 and online at vectisradio.com.
The White Military and Heritage Museum in Northwood. The museum will excite your senses and immerse you in a world of human success over adversity. Call 01983-300037 for more details or to book your ride.
West White Audio, the island's technical troubleshooters. Having problems with your phone, or are your electrics on the blink? Maybe you need your appliances or your building wiring tested or just a light fitted. We've got it covered. For friendly, reliable service, call Kelvin on 754666 or click westwhiteaudio.co.uk. All Island coverage.
The Isle of Wight Kidney Patient Association is here to help all renal patients on the island. We also offer support to the local dialysis unit. We can help with financial backup for patients and partners, with travel expenses or hospital treatment. We also have a program of social events and activities, as well as fundraising that links the community together. Call us on 01983 611 671 or visit our website on iowkidneypatientassociation.com.
It was a well-paying job, respectable, wearing a suit and tie every day. But I drink 24/7. Drank on the way to work, drank at work.
I never could come to terms with admitting that I had an alcohol problem or a pill problem.
I decided to get clean, and so I went to the Narconon program.
Not only did I handle my drug addiction, I completely knew how to live life.
Call Narconon today at 01435 512 460. 01435 512 460.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.
This show is sponsored by Narconon UK.
Call Narconon today at 01435 512 460. 01435 512 460.
Hello and welcome back, Charlotte Courtney, former CEO of the Isle of Wight Zoo and founder of the Wild Heart Trust. Before the break, we were talking about you and your partner and the work you do at the zoo, because it is a sanctuary primarily, isn't it? That's what it is here for.
It is. I mean, we're called a zoo, and people sometimes say, you know, why do you call yourselves a zoo when, you know, you predominantly rescue animals and so forth? But we're licensed as a zoo. We're not embarrassed to be called a zoo. There are good zoos and bad zoos.
Yes.
There are outdated zoos, contemporary and future zoos. So we think it's more about reframing people's idea about what a zoo is rather than changing the packaging, keeping the contents, you know, the same.
Yes.
So we still call ourselves a zoo. But, you know, we are a little... I think, you know, a little sanctuary for people. When they come here, they often feel nice and peaceful, and hopefully the animals do too. And often people do say to us, well, the animals seem very, very relaxed here. And I think that's because we predominantly, you know, see it as their home. And the fact that people are privileged enough to be able to pay something akin to the price of going to the cinema these days or something to come in and stand 6 foot away from a tiger... I mean, my word, that is a real privilege, I think. And, of course, we do walking safaris and all sorts of other things. So for a ticket price, I think, obviously, we couldn't survive without people coming to visit the animals, because that's our bread and butter in terms of what, you know, the charity needs beyond fundraising and so forth. So, yes, I think sanctuary is a good word, but if we use the word, just use the word in isolation... people come here and say, but you're a zoo.
Yes.
So it's, yeah, we did try it once. It didn't really work for that reason.
Yes, I think zoo has that connotation, like you say, of being an attraction where people want to come and bring their children. And sanctuary has a slightly different feel to it, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. But you are saving these animals.
We have involvement in sort of the wider conservation and trying to hold on to as much biodiversity as possible for the good of all animals and humans, let's face it. Also, of course, we are deeply committed to wanting to improve welfare for animals and to ensure that individual animals that are in our care, because there are greatest responsibility because they're here with us, have a life which, although different to if they've been in the wild, is still as valid, you know, so that they have a life which is rounded, a life which is full of love, a life which means that they can express as many of their natural behaviours as possible. Although there are always constraints, you know, we can't, for example, of course, offer tigers the opportunity to hunt. You know, we can't do that. It's illegal, for one thing. So there are constraints, and we have to work hard around those. But I liken it sometimes to saying, you know, if you imagine a human that grows up in a city and a human that grows up in the middle of nowhere, you know, in a really rural environment, and each one might be not very comfortable or happy in the other one's territory. So we say when a tiger is living in a zoo, it's always lived in a zoo. That's maybe, you know, one type of environment. If it was in the wild, it'd probably be really unhappy because it's not used to that.
Yeah.
And if you take a tiger from the wild and plonk it in here, it's going to be really unhappy. So a lot of it's what they're used to, although essentially, of course, we'd rather that they were all born in the wild. None of them had to, you know, experience a life that was kind of synthetic in any way, or that they were on any kind of a life support machine dependent on Homo sapien. Because they are apex predators. They've spent millions of years getting to the position where actually they are very successful, and they can, of course, without any interference, live completely independently of humans very successfully.
Mm. But the ones you currently have here, if they were released into the wild, they wouldn't survive.
Oh, they would die in weeks. Yeah. Give them weeks. Yeah. So they would be signing a death warrant.
They need to be cared for.
Of course, yes. Absolutely. And you won't go anywhere in Europe today and find a big cat that was taken from the wild. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It's illegal to do that. The only way that you would ever get permission to take a big cat out of the wild is if it was becoming troublesome to humans.
Yeah.
So the ones that you see in zoos will be ones that have been bred outside of the wild environment. Obviously, the ones that we are looking to bring in this year are ex-circus tigers. So they've been bred, you know, specifically for that industry, which is not a good thing because that's an entertainment industry, and those days should be, you know, long gone, where tigers or any other animals are there just to entertain human beings.
Yeah, and you talk about them being bred specifically for that. Would a breeding program be something that you would ever engage in here?
But probably not for big cats. Our commitment is more towards looking after unwanted cats or rescued cats. There are zoos, of course, that are committed to breeding, keeping the gene stock healthy of big cats. Otherwise, populations in zoos will die out, and then if we lose them in the wild, they will be extinct. So there is obviously a need for that, but we can't all do everything, and we feel that with small resources or slim resources in terms of space and funding, then we're better just concentrating one area, and so for us that's the rescue of the big cats.
And your partner Chris Packham is on the board of trustees, mm-hmm. and is very supportive and helpful and very proactive, isn't he, with the work here?
He really is. I mean, he's been fantastic in so many ways. And because he's never been based here, you know, and he lives in the New Forest when he's not working, which is most of the time away, and I'm sort of mainly based here, we meet up on weekends. He's always been able to retain a certain distance that's been really healthy in terms of helping to guide some of my decisions and advise me, because he's not here day to day sort of operationally. So that's been really helpful. Although on one occasion, I remember we did walk around the zoo and I was in a particularly foul mood and he was being particularly critical, and I said to him on the verge of tears, it's worse than a zoo inspection. So, I mean, he doesn't pull any punches, and he always, you know, he will always flag up the things where he thinks change is needed. But that's good, and that's what it's about. He was really instrumental in helping me to sort of see the way forward, I suppose, in terms of converting us into a charity. And so, yeah, he's been a great support and continues to be. And obviously, with his profile and connections,
yes.
That's fantastic for us. And we're going to be going out to Spain soon to visit the tigers and do some media work around that. So, yeah.
So when you visit other zoos and sanctuaries, where are the most forward-thinking of those places?
Oh, that's a good question. scattered around, I'd say. I don't think there's necessarily a hub in any one place or country. I think you find a lot of variation throughout, really. And often, as Chris and I both say, and I'm sure people that just visit zoos would notice, quite often you go to a place and you like a bit of it and a bit of that other place and a bit of that other place. And so really, for us, it's about consolidating all of those things that are good into one place and making it special. And that's what we're aiming to do here. And we're a long way off that. You know, we're in our infancy in terms of our vision. But of course, over the years, and I've been to a lot of zoos, I've collected those thoughts and feelings and seen things that I don't like as much as I do like. But we have really strong desires here to grow something which is totally unique, not just for the sake of doing it, that's, you know, unique, but to experiment with a different way of inviting people into our world and inspiring them. So we've got some ideas around that, and we're hoping to put them into practice fairly soon.
Yeah, I went to a zoo which will remain nameless. It was a very beautiful zoo because all the enclosures were Victorian, like large Victorian cages. Mm-hmm. So I suppose in the sort of heyday of the zoo, if you like, when it was.
So the architecture was the prominent thing.
Yes, it was very aesthetically, you know, pleasing, very old fashioned. However, they were very small, mm-hmm. and the animals didn't look happy. So it was a twee lovely thing to walk around, but for the animals I thought this can't be right.
Really. And that's a facet, isn't it, of that time where basically it was literally about, you know, the showing off of these buildings and then plopping the animals in them, rather than these days where all of the planning is around the needs of the animals. And obviously you've got to keep an idea about aesthetics and what works, of course, for education of the people that are going to come to look at them and so forth. But predominantly it's got to be about meeting the needs of the animals first.
Yeah, and I think that's so clear here because, as you were saying earlier, the animals, the minute you come here, you are struck by how laid back, how happy and content all the animals are. Well, how mischievous they are, you know, how full of energy
they express
are.
Themselves.
Yes, in all their
We love
ways.
Naughty animals. We always say we absolutely love it. The naughtier that they are, the better. You know, we love it when they're naughty.
We were watching, I think it was the spider monkeys, getting their fruit salads out of their containers the other day. And it was just like watching kids getting into their packed lunches, you know. It's just fantastic. And this race to open these boxes was just wonderful.
Well, and another thing that I often sort of chat to people about, because they say, you know, obviously you go to some zoos and they have multi-million pound enclosures that we could only ever dream of having that sort of money. And I say to people, but, you know, it's like you could have the most beautiful, exquisite house, you know, possible, and you could be miserable in it. Because if you don't have someone that you like to live with, if you're constantly exposed to people that you can't stand, for example, if you have, you know, basically different components of your life that aren't right, you can be depressed and miserable living in a palace. So it's about getting that balance right. And a big part of it is about the people who look after the animals. It's a very holistic approach. The animals that live with each other, you know, and getting all of those things right. Because otherwise, say, the framework that you put them in, it just becomes irrelevant if it's, you know, if they're not fundamentally happy about and they feel safe and content and they actually enjoy the company of the humans and the other animals that are around them.
Yes, one time a friend of mine came for one of your big cat experiences, and her father was very ill, so she couldn't make it within the time frame on the ticket, and you very kindly allowed her to come at a later date. And you also, really sweet, you've upgraded the experience for her, and it was just wonderful. Came with her to watch her face and to watch her interact as closely as she could with the animals. But the lady who took her around was just phenomenal.
Yeah,
you know, the bond she had with the cats, and then the bond that the three of them had, really, the cats, you know, Sammy, our friend, and the keeper. It was a magical thing, beautiful to watch. Yeah,
I think, and it's hard to put that into words. You did it really well. But it is, there's something about that. And I think there's something as well that always strikes me when you think about, you know, if you were to track, you know, the evolution of Homo sapiens and the evolution of Panthera tigris, and then you were to come to a point where those particular tigers and those particular humans merged, that's a special thing.
Yeah.
And that's come, unfortunately, as a product of something which is, you know, ugly and horrible, insofar as what we've done to tigers to bring them here. But that, actually, aside from that, is a magical, beautiful thing that happens there. And we hope and the Wild Heart Trust hope is that they, you know, we inspire people enough so that they turn their care into action. So they have a moment and that changes something. And that might be that they start ridding themselves of palm oil, you know, so they're not adding to the destruction of Sumatran tiger habitat, or they make choices that are supporting, you know, these animals in their homelands, or I don't know, it could be a range of other things, but something happens. Something's got to happen, you know, beyond that. And it's hard to monitor that, but I think those moments do count, and I think that they do, you know, continue to mean something to people.
Yes, because everything starts off, like you say, with one person in those small moments, and
yeah.
then it does.
It's an emotional experience.
Yes. Yeah. And you believe, don't you, very strongly that knowledge and education are the key to animal conservation here? And
oh, for sure. I think you've got to have that that underpins everything. But of course, often you've got to start with the heart, and that leads to the head. And I think if you try and do it the other way around, it just takes a lot longer. But so we like to try and meet it in the middle and do this balance where people are getting sort of their hearts opened and their heads opened during the visit. If you just pump them through the statistics, pump them full of facts, Wikipedia them to death, they'll just go out. If they have a moment that is kind of special to them, that can count for a lot more.
Oh yes, it's making people mm-hmm. feel things, isn't it? And yeah. you come across as somebody who does lead very much with their heart.
Yes, yeah.
Where you have your team behind you, I suppose perhaps it's useful to have people who lead with their head as well, like you say, to come and meet in the middle.
Yeah, hence this new this new change, really. Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm so in it, you know, and emotionally in it and everything. It has been hard sometimes to sort of, you know, do the planning side and that side of things, which I'm absolutely useless at. And if you had to ask any of my team, honestly, they would just say, yeah, she's useless at it. And I am, and I know that. And that's part of the reason why now, plus we need some really good commercial brains into the place, that we've recruited the person that we have. So I obviously will still be a part of the Wild Heart Trust and sort of, you know, playing a role, I hope, in that, very much still guiding certain things. But we've got to have robust plans in place now and systems and everything, all that sort of business. Otherwise, you know, it starts to creak. So
yeah. Do you think people, your visitors, will feel any a marked difference when that change happens?
Yes, I think they will do, but I think it would be only positive, because we won't lose that spirit and the culture and the ethos and the friendliness and everything that I think makes us, you know, that kind of intimate experience. We won't ever lose that. That is the heart of the Wild Heart Trust. But what we will be doing is putting ourselves in a position where we can start developing, you know, with the interest of the visitors more in mind as well, and just sort of, yeah, just shaping up a little bit better. So I think actually it should be a much better experience for people than it is right now even.
That's hard to imagine, really, because the zoo feels very intimate. And like you say, you do feel that you are physically actually very close to the animals, sort of emotionally and physically, which is really special. And you offer a range of animal experiences here. Can you just tell us a little bit more about those?
Yeah, we do. So if you come on the day as a day visitor, you can have an opportunity to go in with our lemurs or our meerkats as a day encounter as a group. And that's really affordable. You pay £10 a head. Or you can book in advance for a special occasion, for example, a birthday or any kind of special occasion, and you can have a full-on lemur experience. And the guys that do that are just phenomenal, absolutely amazing. And you can meet a range of lemurs and help to feed them. We also do a big cat training experience where you can go and help to train the big cats not to jump through hoops of fire, but for health checks and so forth, we have a training program. So you go with the animal carer and you ask the lion to open its mouth so we can check its teeth and that kind of thing. And we also have a big cat encounter where you go meet the cats behind the scenes and hear about their life stories and just get close to them. You could maybe brush some of them with one of those things called that you use.
Like
the dishes.
Washing up,
yes. It sounds a bit weird, but you know, it sort of works. It's a bit quirky, all different things. And we can do bespoke experiences as well for people. And that's another area that we want to grow, because we realise that we've got capacity to bring in different types of experiences now. So I would keep it for the day. We do keep it for the day, adults and juniors.
I think at one of the zoos you can actually stay on site overnight, can't you?
I know. Yes. That'd be marvellous.
Would that be a possibility? You've got...
Well, maybe in the future. I mean, maybe sort of pods or something like that.
Yes, especially with your location right here at Yavaland and Sandown Beach. I mean, it's just idyllic, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, who could ask for more? You've got a lion, you know, one side, and you've got the sandy beaches the other side.
And I've got friends who live just at the back, and they can hear the lions roar from the garden.
It's like a Serengeti.
Yes.
You're in Sandown.
Fantastic. All right, so we just could go to a short break now, and we'll be right back. Thank you very much, Charlotte Corney.
Vexen's Radio 104.6.
For the people, by the people. Island Harbour presents The Breeze Restaurant and Bar. We offer a variety of delicious foods which can be enjoyed inside the recently refurbished restaurant or outside, overlooking the picturesque marina. Start your day well with something from our breakfast menu. Enjoy afternoon tea with a slice of freshly made cake. Or drop by for an evening meal with the family. We offer a range of tasty British classics with a choice of daily specials. Our produce is locally sourced to ensure quality and taste. The Breeze Restaurant and Bar, one of the Solent's best kept secrets. Call us today on 533-388.
As a business, you have a legal responsibility to dispose of your waste in line with current government legislation. Island Environmental Hygiene Limited are an island company specialising in the collection of sanitary, clinical and hazardous waste, working closely with the Environment Agency to ensure your waste is disposed of legally. Our services are tailored to meet your needs. To find out more, visit islandhygiene.com or call 721-943.
Jewson, the national name with a local heart. We see the Four P's Project as a fantastic opportunity for young people to gain valuable life skills and receive opportunities that may have passed them by. Congratulations to Vectus Radio for taking this initiative, a truly local community-based radio station. Jewson, the national name with a local heart. For kitchens and building materials, phone us on 525 111 or look for jewson.co.uk.
It was a well-paying job, respectable, wearing a suit and tie every day. But I drank 24/7. Drank on the way to work, drank at work.
I never could come to terms with admitting that I had an alcohol problem or a pill problem.
I decided to get clean, and so I went to the Narcanon program.
Not only did I handle my drug addiction, I completely knew how to live life.
Call Narcanon today at 01435 512 460. 01435 512 460.
We are your Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Hello and welcome back, Charlotte Corney. We're here at the Isle of Wight Zoo. It's a beautiful sunny day. I know you've got something very special lined up on the 29th of June. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yes, we do. We're having a party at the zoo, and it's Chris Packham's party at the zoo, actually. So on the 29th of June, we'll be having an event going on throughout the evening, which will be something totally new. It's a charity fundraiser event for the Wild Heart Trust. Myself, I'll be there. I'll be doing some exciting things with the big cats. Chris will be here doing a Q&A. And showing people some animals. Then there'll be one of our other trustees, actually, Ashley Smith, from the wonderful, totally wonderful, Hawk Conservancy Trust in Andover, here with his birds, flying them in the fort, in our old fort. And then Tracy and Charles, two of our wonderful managers on the education and conservation side, will be doing some enrichment with the animals with people. And there will be a hog roast and just a really nice atmosphere. So, yes.
And so this is all a big fundraiser, basically.
Yes,
isn't it?
It is. So we're desperate to obviously reach our potential to sell tickets. They're £40 each, and they can be bought not over the internet, because unfortunately our website's not that good, but they can be bought on site or phone up and buy them.
Super. And what fundraising must be a massive part of what you do. I mean, it's your lifeblood, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Chris Packham on side, which which is a huge, huge help. And you've got this party on the 29th. So is that an all-day event?
No, that's an evening event.
In evening. What time does it start?
It starts, I think, at 6.30 or sort of 7 o'clock, 6.30 for 7 o'clock.
Okay, and it's adults and children?
Children can definitely come. It's a flat rate of £40.
£40 per head.
Yes.
Yeah. Brilliant. And how do people donate, you know, if they just want to give? What's the best way of doing that?
So people can give just generally to the Wild Heart Trust or to specific projects.
And that's on their website, is it?
Yes, we have a Just Giving page. So if people put in Wild Heart Trust Just Giving, it will come up.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can obviously give money here on site to us. And however they want to send a check, anything. And we have a campaign called Hearts for Tigers going on at the moment, which is specific to the circus tigers we'll be bringing in June. And so yes, we're fundraising for that particular project at the moment.
And people do get quite concerned these days, I think, with charities and giving, that all the money does go to the charities. So mm-hmm. I imagine with you, every penny will be going to the welfare of these animals in some way or another, whether it is doing vital admin, which in order to look after the animals, but in one way or the other, that it will be.
I think that's why, actually, I've talked to quite a few people recently who've been looking for different charities to donate to, and they say that why they're attracted to us is because we are small and we're quite grassroots, you know, and we're a small team, so, you know, we're not a big bulky team of people, and therefore they can see that their pennies or pounds that they give really do matter and really do mean something. So I think that's kind of the beauty in a way of donating to smaller charities and also local ones, because you get to come back and see what's actually happened through the money that you've donated.
Yeah. And I think some of the money went on sun cream, because we saw one of the keepers chasing one of the pigs around the enclosure.
Daphne, probably.
Yes, trying to corral her into a corner so that he could spray her tummy.
Brilliant.
Fantastic.
Honestly, I don't know these animals. Nala, the little lioness, well, she's not that little, she's 19 years old, but she gets sunburnt nose and she has to have sun cream on her nose in the summertime. She's really cute.
That must take some doing.
No, she's really good. She comes up to her bedroom door and we have a paintbrush and just put it on her nose. Yeah, sweet.
Good way of doing it. So you must have a wealth of stories. You spoke about when you were younger, and but just talking about putting sun cream on animals with paintbrushes, what's the most bizarre thing you think you've ever challenged, you've ever faced?
Oh, gee, I'm useless with these sorts of questions because I can't recall things.
And I suppose so much of it is so normal to you, isn't it?
And some of it is probably legal. I probably couldn't even say on air. We've done some weird things here. And, of course, in days gone by, you know, things were just so different. And, you know, especially when Dad was alive, it was just bonkers. Everything was completely bonkers.
Because he strikes me as something of a maverick, your father.
He was totally, and he was just one of a kind that, you know, they threw away the mould with him. He was an amazing man. He had great guts, you know, to have done what he did, to take this place on when it was just riddled with vermin and, you know, the animals were in a terrible state. And, of course, the reputation was really, you know, in tatters as well.
Yes, and he didn't have any experience, did he, of running any kind of animal enclosures or zoos or...
No, none.
Pet shops.
None, but somehow he managed to get to know very well some really influential people. He got really friendly with the zoo director of the National Zoo of America. We ended up going to stay with this guy in the States, and I used to think, you've only got this tiny little zoo in the Isle of Wight, you know. And then he became a great friend, Mike Robinson. He came over and stayed with us here, and that's it. He just didn't care. He was just barefaced, and I think he needed to be, because otherwise this place would never have survived. And of course, the zoo's been here since the 1950s. It was the first ever collection of exotic animals open to the public on the Isle of Wight, so it's got heritage. I hope that, you know, he would be happy, or, you know, mildly content with the way
I'm
the things
sure
have gone.
Very proud. I'm sure. Yes. But was there ever a point where any of you, as a family, just thought, what on earth have we done? We can't continue with this.
I think, it was, I mean, you know, you can paint, I suppose, different pictures, and it's the same with everybody's life. And, you know, I would never want to change my life, but it was extraordinarily stressful. A lot of the time, you know, it was very, very stressful, and for lots of different reasons, but predominantly financially. You know, we were always on an edge financially, and there was a lot of strain on the family constantly.
And did the animals come first? As you as children, did you get the that impression that the animals came first.
Absolutely, and that was, again, fundamental, you know, and intrinsic to how we lived. I mean, often we'd be eating at 10 o'clock at night, and I still do, you know, I'll eat at 10, 11 o'clock at night, because that's what we always did. Christmas Day, that was it. We were, you know, we were always working, and we would have our Christmas dinner at 10 o'clock at night or something. So, yeah, that was completely normal. And the animals were, you know, part of the fabric of the family, and that's how it always was. There's no separation between that.
And it must have been very hard for you to go away on holiday, for example, as a family unit.
Yeah, we did normally go away in the sort of wintertime, always to other zoos, you know, visiting other zoos. And we had a guy, funnily enough, he came back, I saw him on Saturday, a guy who managed the zoo at that time called Alan Graham, and he was great. But yes, it's all consuming, you know, it is all consuming. It's like being on your own little planet in a zoo, really.
Yes. And do you think that's helped you relate to people better? Like you say, you're very led with your heart. Or do you find that you're one of these people that'd rather be with animals?
No, I wouldn't necessarily just rather being with animals. I think we're animals, and therefore I don't see like a great distinction in terms of, like, you know, would I rather be with humans or non-humans? You know, what species would I rather be with? Because we're all animals. I would just rather be with animals, human or non, that I like, you know. That's it. So I saw a friend of mine, Holly, yesterday, and she's one of my greatest friends, and I only have a few. I love her company. But I love the company of Nala, you know, just as much. So yes. There's no separation, really.
And when you go on holiday, I remember we were talking about this some months ago, and you were just about to jet off somewhere for a long while, and you were really having to sort of steel yourself to leave your animals.
I'm not sure when that was, but that might have been. I know I was supposed to go to Antarctica with Chris in November. I cancelled last minute because Zena wasn't looking good. The white tiger, and we subsequently had to put her to sleep whilst he was away. And a couple of years before, I'd cancelled going to Antarctica because Zia wasn't looking good, and she was up dancing around 2 days after Christmas. Mm. So it's, yeah, being away from them when I can't get back is stressful.
Yes, so, but you, the decision to... I mean, I struggle leaving my cat, and, you know, I can't imagine what it's like leaving a zoo behind that you feel so deeply for, clearly.
Yeah, no, that is, it's always a massive consideration, and it's never, you're never, you know, free from the anxiety in a way about, you know, obviously I totally trust the team and everything, but it's just more about, you know, wanting to be close to those animals that you love.
Yes.
Especially if they're older.
So in terms of variety of animals, we've spoken a lot about the big cats and the monkeys and the stung cream on the pig. What other ones have you got here?
Oh, we've got some brilliant animals. We've got some porcupines who's going to be moving house for the summer. We're just preparing their new area, and they're really funky. Porcupines, meerkats, of course, that everybody loves, really good for engagement. Lots and lots of lemurs, different species of lemurs from Madagascar that are highly endangered and all just fantastic characters. You know, they really are a very interesting group of animals. We've got marmosets here, giant rabbits.
Don't get me
talking about giant rabbits. We'll never finish in time. I love giant rabbits. I have two, Otty and Abella. We have snakes, you know, we have cockatoo, we have wallabies, yeah, all sorts of animals. But, of course, you know, the animals all play a role, you know. They do have to work a little bit for their living.
So, I mean, it's just been a real joy talking to you, Charlotte. Thank you so much for your time. Can you just remind us about the all-important fundraising if people do want to donate?
Yes.
What's the easiest way?
The easiest way would probably be via our Just Giving page, to be honest. So if you type in Wild Heart Trust, Just Giving, then it will come up.
That's super. Well, thank you again. And please come along on the 29th of June in the evening to Chris Packham's party at the zoo. And I can't imagine what fun that's going to be. So thank you so much again, Charlotte. Pleasure.